Welcome to Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub, coming to you today from the Compliance and Ethics Institute in Las Vegas. I am joined by Ricardo Pelafoni, who's the founder of The Broadcat. Many of you perhaps have seen his stuff on the blog as well as in the exhibitor handouts at the meeting. So first of all, Ricardo, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
So, you know, you're talking at the Institute about how to prove your program works.
Yep.
One of the challenges of compliance is that success is measured by nothing happens. I mean, basically, there hasn't been an incident. And you also have the challenge of people don't regularly pick up the phone and call to say, hey, guess what felony I almost committed today, but didn't because of you. Is the fact that nothing happened a fair measurement?
I think it's an unhelpful one. And when I say unhelpful, I mean there's so many things that go on to ultimately drive whether something happens or something doesn't happen. Some of them are within your control. Some of them are totally external. And so I think it would be possible to measure that, but so enormously complicated that it probably would not be worth the amount of just analytical and computational complexity you'd put into doing it. So I think it's just not a helpful metric for that.
So what is a good measurement? I mean, how do you demonstrate success?
I think you measure business process improvement. And so, like, one of the issues that I have with the, you know, compliance is proving a negative, nothing happened state of the world, is that it's really all or nothing. And one of the assumptions that's built into it is that compliance events are basically random. And so if they're random, then the only thing you can really measure is whether they happened or not. And so if that's your state of the world, it is really, really difficult to measure. Again, I still think possible, but really hard. But the reality is we know exactly what causes compliance issues. It's things people do. And they tend to be pretty knowable things. So like your HR team does something, your finance team doesn't really check the things they approve, your procurement team has a weak process, sales doesn't know their limits, marketing is loose with their marketing development funds, that type of stuff. It's really common across companies, and this is business process. And business process is really, really measurable. And so instead of focusing on whether something happened or not, which involves a lot of factors that you can't control, you can control and monitor business process. And so did finance get better at doing something which could have led to a compliance failure instead of just focusing on compliance failure at the end?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you mention it. I mean, one of the things I always think about is somebody, apropos, not to blame too much on the finance function, but as they say that, you know, in the past, accounting just looks to see if there's receipts for the TVs that your office bought, and nobody asks the question, why does an office of three people need seven televisions?
Right.
That maybe something was there. So it's along those lines. So one question always people want to know is, you know, ROI, how can I track it back to the amount of money I've invested in the compliance program? Can you take it back that far? How can you do it?
I think you can. I think part of it is starting with a really clear definition of what the business problem is. So all compliance problems are at some level business problems. So the example you just gave, finance is not really reviewing the stuff, they're just approving it. So that's a business problem. And that can be quantified and that can be translated into dollars, because when finance isn't doing that, it incurs employee time, it incurs external cost, and employee time costs money. So you can break those things down and say, you know what? Finance isn't doing this. We'd run around and do a bunch of investigations or audits as a consequence of that. This is what they cost. Employee time costs this. Outside advisors, software, whatever costs that. That's really where the costs come from. And this is part of our session tomorrow, is just focusing on understanding what the problem is and what it costs first, because that's how you get budget to solve the problem. I think one of the reasons folks really struggle with compliance measurement is they jump straight to solutions. So they go from like high level risk to solutions. So I've got anti-corruption, I need to go get all these anti-corruption solutions in place. But they're skipping the step of like, so practically for the business, what does anti-corruption risk mean? Like what are people doing and what does that cost us? When you have that number, then it's much easier to get budget for something and say, hey, this thing that's going on is costing us $100,000 a year. If we get this due diligence tool, this software, whatever, that's $50,000 a year. That's half as much money. That's a pretty solid business case for doing it. So I think that's it. It's thinking things, starting with a problem, that lets you build a business case for the solution. And then you just use the same measurements after the solution's in place to show that it should have gotten better. And if it didn't, it's at least good that you know that. Like, you know the business process fix you put in place didn't get the job done, rather than being surprised later when you have, like, a real big issue. So it's focusing on the things that really create, like, the things people do that create the risk or mitigate the risk at your company, and making those processes better. And business process is, it's measurable in financial terms.
What do you do for an organization where they haven't had a problem yet, they really haven't invested, it's a new thing? Mm-hmm. How do you start to get people to start realizing and build that business case of why we need to do this if the bell hasn't rung yet?
Yeah, so you're like ground zero compliance, right. But they've hired a compliance person so far. Right. And that's kind of why we're having this discussion. My advice would be focus on the whatever your biggest risk is in one single thing. And so if I was coming to the situation today, if I went back in-house, I'd start with the finance team, because that's virtually all compliance, not all of them, but virtually all compliance roads lead through finance in some way. I would start there and I would look at how good are they at invoices, T&E, petty cash, and I would really understand, like, are they really reviewing stuff? And if they are they catching the stuff that I care about as a compliance professional? Because that's different than the stuff your governance lawyers, your SOX lawyers are going to care about. And then that's where I would kind of build the case from there and say, okay, they're not getting the job done here. They're missing things because maybe they just don't know they're supposed to be looking for it. But whatever, that risk is out there. And as a consequence, because now we know this stuff's just getting rubber stamped. And now that we know it, we have to do something with it. And now that we have to now go fix it because we identified these things that were not being reviewed, we have to go fix them. And it's expensive to do that. It's much cheaper just to get them better at doing that in the front end. I would start with that as a business case. And what I want to walk away from is saying, look, our finance team was just kind of rubber stamping invoices from this high-risk region of the world. They didn't know what they were supposed to be doing. As a consequence, we had to spend all this money running around, doing investigations, due diligence reports, the whole shebang. That's all reactive compliance. What I want us to do is switch gears to proactive compliance. And I built my program from there by saying, this is what it costs to fix it reactively. And now that we've quantified that problem, this is what a proactive solution would cost that would have just stopped that, whether that's better finance software, whether that's training, headcount, whatever. But I would start with one problem, just whatever the highest risk thing is, and then go down from there. And I think that sounds like a really obvious thing, but I think it's when you get into a compliance job, it's really tempting to just like throw as much stuff at the wall as you can. And if you get spread really thin, then you end up confusing activity for results. And that doesn't get the job done from the business person's perspective. They want to see results. And it's better you do fewer things and can show that than many things and you can't.
Okay. Let me switch gears a little, because I'd really be remiss if we didn't take the opportunity to discuss training.
Sure.
It's what you're best known for. You've done a lot of work that I think is very notable in terms of making compliance training much more visual, with a lot of infographics, other things. How can compliance professionals think visually? Most of us, visually is at most a PowerPoint slide or a graph.
Sure.
What can people do?
Yeah, I think, and this is going to sound like kind of a contrarian answer, but I would encourage people to try not to consciously think visually, but be really, really problem and usefulness focused. So like what we do at Brockett, we don't think, we're not conscious about like, hey, what kind of graphics can we add to this? Because I think that ends to adding just like extraneous decoration. Our process is we start with problem. We want to understand whatever problem, what behavior are we trying to drive? What's the right outcome from this piece of training? That should lead to content. So if you really understand the problem, what you're trying to accomplish, then you can define the content that gets you there. And then, and only then, can you pick the right format. And I think it's really tempting to jump straight to format and say, we need an infographic, we need a video, we need a game, whatever. But those are just mediums. And they're good for different purposes, but the problem drives that. So if you're using video for a problem that really doesn't require video, or graphics, or something that doesn't require graphics, you end up doing media for the sake of media, which doesn't really add a lot of value. It actually adds distracting value. Mm-hmm. And so the reason I'm pushing back on this is if you get into the mindset of saying, we really need our stuff to be more visual, what you'll practically end up doing is just decorating everything and saying, we've got these slides, we already wrote the content, and now we need to add some stock photos or some pictures or some like graphics or videos or whatever to it. That's just extraneous noise. Taking an approach that would really make it visual would be starting with what's the problem, what's the content, what's the format? Because then when you get to the format stage, what you think about is, oh, now that we've defined the content, we're thinking about format. Are there parts of that format that can replace the content or enhance it rather than just kind of like adding random visual interest? So that would be my advice, is like, don't get hung up on thinking about making it visual, and start with a problem and do format last. Don't lead with a format that you want.
It's good counsel. I mean, it goes back to my days in advertising where we didn't start with, you want to do a commercial, you start with what's the commercial supposed to, or communication to do.
And that ties back to results too. You start with like, what are you trying to accomplish? And that makes it easier to measure.
And apropos of the results, you know, let's conclude with one other question. Are there any other thoughts you have on what people can do to think about how they can make the training itself much more effective as they go to do it?
Yeah, and I think the takeaway for that would be to treat people like adults. so like duh, right? But I think a lot of training treats people like children in the way they learn. So it's modeled after how children learn things instead of how adults learn things. Adults are really problem-centered learners, and they want to apply it right away. And then that resonates with you if you think about, like, well, how do you do learning as a grown-up? You go on Google, and then you drill down to something to solve an immediate problem that you have. A lot of the way, and this is stuff we talked about in the book that was in everybody's bag, but, like, a lot of the way that compliance training is delivered is really focused on how children learn. So it's going to be on a course in an academic setting, and it's going to be delivered in like kind of like software that sits outside business process. And so, and it's going to be just pushed out to employees. So that's really how you learn in school. It's how children learn. Adults, and so what we recommend folks do is think about taking your training and when is it going to be most useful to someone? So what is someone doing where they need to know this? How can you identify that to them right then? At companies, a lot of this stuff exists in workflows. So, and if you're talking about corporate compliance, a lot of your risk is people approving stuff. There's certainly risk in people doing things, but like when they approve it, it gets much worse. And so most of those approvals happen through automated workflows. And then you build in something that says, hey, you're about to approve this thing. Before you approve it, you are just remember that there's a compliance component to this. And so you'd word it better than what I'm doing right now.
Right.
But just remember there's a compliance component to this. And by clicking approve on this invoice, you're affirming there's no red flags. And if you need help, click here. And then that click here, that goes to where the training is. And so it's really directed by, hey, you're being presented with a compliance problem right here in the moment. Do you need help? This is where to get it. And then frame it around what people are doing there. And I think that goes a huge, huge way to just treating people like grown-ups. They're like, hey, you have a problem. You're trying to solve it. And I think the final thing about treating people like a grown-up is just remembering that you can't force adults to learn. And so I think what I find frustrating about a lot of compliance training is that folks focus on, like, how do we make people click on every single thing? How do we slow them down so they have to read it? They're not going to. So, like, if they don't want to read it, they're not going to read it. Like, you can put it on their screen and require them to, be 1 minute on every slide. They'll bring up YouTube in another window. You can lock out their screen. They'll bring it up on their phone. Like, there's no way to force someone to learn that doesn't want to learn, who's an adult. And so, as a result, like, just focus on the people that really want to learn. How can you make it easy for them and useful for them to do their job compliantly? And if you do that, you don't really need to worry about the people that are going to click through as fast as they can. They're going to do that, and like literally, no matter what you do, you could put on like the Clockwork Orange specula to like hold their eyes open. They're still going to find a way to get around it.
Add the eye drops to
keep like, them. Doesn't matter. Uh-huh. They're going to find a way around it. So just try and make things as easy as possible for the good employees who want to learn. They're the only ones you can reach, and if you're framing it around them and making it useful for them and giving it to them when they need it. Then I think you'll go a long way to seeing your training be successful.
Great. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk today and for sharing your wisdom here at the Compliance and Ethics Institute. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the SEC saying hope we expanded your compliance perspectives.